Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to Season 13 of the Parenting Aces podcast, a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and this week we are talking college admissions. Not college recruiting, but college admissions. I am so excited to have with me an expert in this field. Dr. Pamela Ellis has multiple degrees, her BA from Stanford University, her MBA from Dartmouth, her PhD from Stanford, and she is now working with families to help guide them through the college application process, but also, you know, uses the college application process as an opportunity to help these students gain skills that are going to serve them later in life. And hey, what does that sound like? Sounds a little like what we talk about on Parenting Aces quite often. So I'm super excited for Dr. Pamela Ellis to be here and for you guys to hear from her about the best ways for our students to go about building their list of potential colleges to apply to, and what are some of the important factors to consider when applying to college. So I'm going to bring her on in just a second. Before I do that, quick reminder, if you are not already a premium member of Parenting Aces, we would so love to have you. Please go to our website, parentingaces.com, click on the join button. You've got several options there, and we would love to have you be a more involved member of the community. Also, if you're not following us on our socials, we're on Facebook, we're on X, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube, we're on LinkedIn. Please follow us. We share so much information through those channels, and we don't want you to miss out. So now sit back, relax, and enjoy this very enlightening conversation with Dr. Pamela Ellis.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Pamela Ellis, thank you so much for joining us this week. I am super excited to pick your brain about the college admissions process and what Compass, oh my goodness, I'm like tongue-tied, Compass College Advisory can offer to our Parenting Aces community. And welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm excited to join you today.
I want to just start out by asking you what enticed you or drew you to this field of college admissions and working with students and their families to help them kind of find their way to, I won't say the perfect college, because I think there are lots of perfect colleges for kids, but to help them narrow their choices and make good decisions.
Yeah, I would say I really came to this work when I became a mom, because when I became a mom, I just became obsessed with schooling and trying to figure out how to help my kids navigate through K-12. And that's what drove me to go back to Stanford to get my doctorate degree. And my doctorate work is around high school to college transition. And so I was doing work as an education researcher after finishing my doctorate and still working very hands-on with my children. And I had even homeschooled at one point. And also during my doctoral program, I was part of a parenting co-op where we would spend time in their preschool during the week, several hours. And so with that background, I was doing education research as well as working with my own kids. And some families saw what I was doing and asked if I would help them. And when I started helping them, I created a curriculum based on my doctoral work. And it's really focused around finding the right fit. And like you said at the outset, there are dozens of colleges that can be a great fit for any one teen. And that's what I do. That's my passion. And I refer to it as my calling because there really isn't anything else I would be doing but this.
I love it. I love it because I feel the same way. I absolutely do. I want to just point out that you are not focused specifically on athletic college recruiting. This is college admissions in a more generic sense. That said, you do have someone on your staff that is a former collegiate athlete who knows that piece of the college application and recruiting process. So,
yeah, absolutely. And even before she joined our team, I had worked with students who were athletes and would often partner with another colleague when I had questions about it. And so with Simone joining our team, that just brings, that elevates what we're doing because she has, you know, really walked the walk in terms of being a highly recruited athlete and then going on to play professionally.
Mm-hmm. And I want to just also add that this is a process. And when I do consultations with families, you know, I encourage the student athletes to start as early as ninth grade, working toward their goal of playing tennis in college. But playing a sport in college is one way of going about it. There's also a way to continue playing your sport, not at the varsity level, which would then require you to go through a more mainstream college application process. And so I'm hoping that you can kind of share with us some advice that you would have for, let's say, starting with ninth graders, or maybe you even want to start in eighth grade. I don't know how early you want these kids to start thinking about college, but maybe give us some of the pointers or important touch points that families need to know about.
Yeah, that's a great question, Lisa. And I want parents to be thinking about it in middle school and making sure that their child is in the right classes, especially their math placement. And for students, it's really starting to think of more about themselves and what they want. We do work with students in ninth grade. We have a ninth grade program, and it has nothing to do with college. It's all about the student developing their self-awareness, developing those skills of independence and self-advocacy before we even start talking about colleges. And when students start with us later, you know, perhaps in junior year, we still start with them because that's how we start with looking at colleges. We don't start with the colleges first. We start with that student, understanding who they are, their family. And we do a personality assessment to really create an organic list. And that's when we start talking about colleges, but not too soon, because I think that there's already so much stress in this process. And when you make it all about the colleges, that's when it's even more stressful, because students will then tend to fixate on getting into a particular college. And that kind of narrowed thinking about it, I think, is really even more stressful than it should be. And so I really want students to think about what they want, get a chance to think about what their interests might be in terms of perhaps pursuing a particular major, do some things that are experiential through summer programs. And in junior year, they'll be ripe to start thinking about colleges and the specific colleges that would be a good fit for them.
So you say you start with the student, and I love that, you know, getting them to develop that self-awareness, maybe asking themselves some tough questions about the things they're looking for. And then once you've got them thinking along those lines, what are some of the questions that you're asking these kids to ponder as they start developing a list of schools to apply to?
Yeah. Why college? Why their sport in college? Why do they want to be a collegiate athlete if that's their intent? And we start with that to really think about then putting together, you know, those factors of fit for them, because we base our list on five factors of fit in their academic, social, financial, vocational, and cultural. And so thinking about all of those aspects as it relates to the student, then we start to look at the colleges and how they match up with those five factors of fit.
At what age do you suggest that the student and the family as a whole start visiting college campuses? And how have virtual campus tours kind of impacted that?
That's another really great question. We really don't encourage much in the way of visits until junior year. And I say that because oftentimes, Lisa, what happens is when students or families start to look at colleges long before then, it's not because the student has an interest or because they've researched that college. They're going either because of the location or the brand name. And that then sets up the student to believe that these are the only colleges to aspire to. And I really want them to focus on, you know, what is this for me? You know, what is it about this college that it's a great fit for me that I even want to visit it? And then doing the visit. If they've done some research on it beforehand and they know that, yes, they want to visit in eighth grade or ninth grade, fine, go visit. But I don't want to set it up where they're going to visit, you know, these colleges that have this big brand name for the sake of it's a brand name college, because that's usually the only reason. And students I've seen have been burned out by the time they really want to see the campuses or need to see the campus to demonstrate interest in junior year.
I love when I have guests that reinforce the stuff that I say.
That's what I'm here for.
I love it. And you would think we had had this conversation prior to recording, but I promise y'all we haven't. One of my missions in recent years has been to try and get these tennis families to look beyond the brand names and to understand that there are some incredible schools and incredible tennis programs outside of Division I, outside of the teams you see on TV, you know, outside of the award winners that might be the right fit.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think when the process is forefronted with the student, their why, who they are, what their interests are, then that helps to dispel the notion that it has to be a brand name in order to be a quote unquote good college. You know, because sometimes when you ask students around about how they would define a good college, the things that they're talking about, the things that they desire, really have nothing to do with the brand name. And so it's like, well, yeah, if those are the things you're looking for, let's go for that. And because there are tons of great schools out there that fit exactly what you're looking for. And indeed, they could be colleges where you can also be a part of the team and a community and thrive there.
Right, right. What are some of the biggest challenges you're seeing in 2024, in the 2023-24 academic year for students starting the application process? Or, well, I guess by the time this airs, they're done applying, they're waiting for results, but the juniors are starting to put together their lists and their visits and all of that.
Yeah. So what I am seeing in terms of, you know, students putting their list together is, you know, really starting to see some things that they hadn't considered just yet. And I'm seeing that because part of what we do in terms of helping students to develop their list is we give them a guide sheet around how to research colleges. And when they're researching the colleges, it really starts to develop in them this sense of what they want and what they don't want in a college. And that kind of self-awareness, that kind of maturity is really important to their, you know, whole admissions process. And, you know, one of the biggest things that's certainly been coming out, which I think is almost a kind of like an effect of the COVID era, is that so many students are looking for community. I was seeing it, you know, 21, 22, and I think it's only, you know, accelerated in terms of that being at the forefront of what students are looking for when they start to research the colleges. You know, it's that sense of community that is so important. And for many students, when they are talking about their why for college, it's to become independent, which I also think has been born out of COVID because they were spending so much time with parents. And sometimes parents can, you know, I know sometimes I feel that we can be smothering. I know at times I've had to catch myself with my own children in that regard. And so that sense of community and wanting to become independent has really come to the forefront in terms of their desires in a college experience.
How are they expressing that? Because that's a very adult concept to think about, right? You know, seeking a sense of community when I go to college. It's not a typical teenager response to why do you want to go to college?
Oh, well, you know something? I have been doing this survey, Lisa, for about 15 years. As long as I've had my business, it's been a survey to ask students their why when we first start working together. That's the first thing I ask. And I give them about 13 options. Independence is one of them. It's always been on that list. And, you know, it wasn't as prominent earlier in my practice, but in these last few years, it's become like in the top five. Wow. But the thing about the community piece, I think it's the information that they're reading. So one of the tools, one of the resources that they're reading about in doing their college research with me is the FIS guide. And the FIS guide talks about community at the campuses. And so I think that's where that seed is planted. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not saying that they're looking for that sense for community so much as they may say, you know, I want to have friends. You know, sometimes, especially I see it in 10th grade, you know, where kids have really gone through some things socially as a 10th grader. They, you know, they don't want to bring that into college where they're having, you know, problems with other girls or, you know, classmates. They don't want that kind of tension. Mm. And so that's how it comes up.
That's so interesting. I think about that word community, and I think about our children, this generation that is applying to college now, or that's getting ready to start applying to college. They have grown up in the era of social media. They've not known a life without social media. Social media is all about, quote, community. However, it's virtual. It's not real life. And like you said, coming out of COVID, where kids were separated from their peers, they were separated from teammates, from coaches, from teachers, that they're now so hungry for that face-to-face, in-person connection and building this network of family, so to speak, around them that is going to carry them in that transition into adulthood. I find that so fascinating. And I think especially for tennis players, because I don't know how familiar you are with tennis, but tennis is an individual sport. And kids that go through junior tennis are oftentimes, it's the kid and the coach or the kid and a parent. It's not a team per se until they get to college.
Right.
So yeah, very interesting to think about that and, you know, gaining that self-awareness. And I think opening the door to having these conversations between the parents and the children is also super important. Can you talk a little bit about, Pamela, the role of the parent in the college application process versus the role of the student in the process?
Yeah, that's great. So the student owns the process. The parent is...
I love you so much. I can't even tell you. Okay, keep going.
The parent trusts the process and supports them with it. And so that's how I see those roles. And I choose my words carefully with that, because so many times I see parents doing the process for their students. And that's where I really want to caution them not to do that, because it actually works against them, works against the students, and can hurt their chances, not only of admissions, but, you know, with scholarships as well. And so why would you want to do that?
Yeah. And not only hurts the students' chances with admissions, but also can hurt the parent-child relationship.
It absolutely can. And that's something you don't want to have happen either. I was talking with a dad, Lisa, of a senior some months ago, a couple of months ago, and he was, you know, he and his spouse were already at odds because of the, you know, where their child was applying. And, you know, I just told him, I was just like, you know, something is really not worth it for you to insist that they apply to this college. I mean, you don't want to end senior year like that, because your relationship with them is so much more important. And I haven't spoken to him since then. He's still a client.
He didn't like you saying that so much, I guess.
I don't know. We were on the phone, and I mean, I knew, you know, how he was feeling, and I just wanted to convey to him that, you know, the relationship is so much more important than being quote unquote right about saying, you know, you should apply to this college.
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, if the student does get admitted and go and they're resentful, what good is that? You know, you want them to be at a place where they're going to thrive, and they need to have some buy-in to that decision.
For sure. For sure. You mentioned scholarships a second ago, so I want to kind of go down that path a minute. The financial side of college, which is only getting more and more expensive. And The scholarships are there, but trying to identify which scholarships might be applicable and which are worth the time to apply to is a big challenge. For tennis players, again, on the boys' side, if they're looking at a Division I school, there are only 4.5 scholarships available in men's tennis. There are 8 on the women's side. So for the girls, it's a little bit easier to get the financial help if they're going Division I. But for the boys, it is, oh my gosh, such a challenge. And oftentimes families find themselves in a situation where they are having to supplement the athletic money that's maybe offered. Or again, if they're going Division III where there is no athletic money, then you've got to get creative in financing this college thing.
Yeah. Here's the thing. With our families over the years, the average scholarship has been $75,000.
Wow.
And the way that we've been able to do that consistently is focusing on the fit, because the colleges do have support for students. And that's one of those 5 factors of fit. And when it's a good fit, they may not call it an athletic scholarship, but they do have monies for students to come. Mm-hmm. And we have intentionally focused on that because so many of the families that we work with don't qualify for need-based monies.
Right.
And so with that being said, when you're focused on the list and it's a right fit and students, you know, have, you know, that strong application portfolio to support, you know, admissions as well, then that's where they have the best chance of getting scholarships. And so that's where we invest our time. There are certainly outside scholarships that are available as early as age 13 that you can apply to. Some of those may require that you have a, you know, demonstrate need, but there are some that do not. And so we share that monthly list with families and they're welcome to apply and we will, you know, support them. We'll help them with the essays that they're working on. But for the most part, their money is coming directly from the colleges.
Interesting. Interesting. You talked about, you know, the application, the essays. There is this misconception that I am constantly battling against, that student athletes don't have to worry. The coach is going to get them admitted into the college regardless.
Yeah.
Can you please address that and tell us the reality of that?
The reality of that is that that's not real. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes students do want to fall back on that. And I've certainly heard it even before families start working with us, you know, in our initial conversations, they're just like, well, we decided, you know, we're not going to work with you because, you know, our son is, you know, his coach is going to help him. And I'm just like, okay, you know, see you at graduation.
Yeah.
But that's just a myth. And something that I really want to disabuse families of believing, because what it does too is I think that it absolves the student of owning that process and really doing those things that are going to support them with having a strong application to begin with. And so It's definitely a myth, because I haven't seen that to be the case. And it's, you know, really disappointing to see when there's that over-reliance on a coach. And one of the things that I'll say too, that we've certainly seen, is that, you know, coaches can be fickle. And I'm referring to the college coaches in this regard, because they see a lot of students. And, you know, sometimes students are like, you know, this coach really likes me, you know, because they, you know, I met with them on campus, et cetera. at the end of the day, if they need a, you know, a left-handed pitcher and you're not, you know, I mean, they're going to go with that. Yeah. And yeah. And I mean, I've seen students really be disappointed because they're thinking that, you know, this coach really likes them and that means that they're going to get in. And yeah. on the same side with their high school team, sometimes feeling like my coach has relationships with X. And so that means I can get into this uber selective college because my coach went to school with their coach
right.
in college.
Yeah. And I've shared this before. When my son was going through his college recruiting, he was, you know, given an offer to play at a school that was academically very strong. Mm-hmm. And my son's grades were not strong. And he had to apply to the school and was on pins and needles until he got that acceptance letter. It was not a guarantee that he was going to get in, even though right. the coach had made him an offer to come play there. He still had to get through the admissions department. And
yes, yes, they do. They do. Yeah. And, you know, this comes up every year when we're talking about courses for students to take. And you know, I'm just like, you know, I've seen a lot of transcripts and have a pretty good idea of what's competitive versus what's not. And you can tell if a course load just really isn't rigorous. And I just don't think that students should slack off in senior year, start taking these different electives, drop out of, you know, foreign language. No, you didn't know. You still need to have, you know, a very strong academic transcript as well. And that, you know, brings me to test scores, because sometimes students feel like, you know, because I'm an athlete, I don't need to worry about a test score since they're quote unquote test optional. And that's just not true.
You still advise the high schoolers to take an ACT or an SAT?
Yes. And I say either or. And the thing about it is, if their score isn't as competitive, they know that, don't send it in. Mm-hmm. But to get into senior year, you haven't taken it, you don't know where you stand, and you're worried that someone may ask, it's just, you know, I think it's too much stress. Mm-hmm. And so I say at least, you know, take it, see where you are, so that you can be armed with making the decision on whether or not you submit the score. But if you are in a situation where you have to, because I have seen that come up where, you know, students may send in an application in an early action round, and then they get a notice back, you know, we're going to defer you to regular and we want to see your test score. If they didn't have that, you know, to go and take a test in December of your senior year, the likelihood of that being as strong as it could have been earlier is slimmer. Mm-hmm. And so I just want students to be prepared and not feel intimidated by the tests at all or what their score may be. It's like, if it's disappointing and you want to retake it, you can. And know that it's going to be twice and we're not going to be trying to take it four and five times, but you know, we're going to keep it all in perspective.
Yeah. When students do go visit campuses, what are some of the questions that you advise them to ask? Because we know, you know, just like most things in life these days, when you go on a campus tour, or even when you go meet with a college coach, the tour guide, the coach's job is to sell you on their school. And they're right. really good salespeople.
They are.
That's why they're doing that job. So how do kids kind of get through the fluff to the meat of what life at that particular school really looks like?
I still believe that the best visit is going to start with them doing some research about that college. So not going to the college cold. That way, they're not asking questions that are already on the website. like, you know, asking how many students are here, you know, wow, this looks like it's fewer or more, you know, or thinking that, you know, it's in a certain, you know, area of town and it's not. I think, you know, some of the questions, you know, could be, you know, what kind of students, you know, thrive here, are successful here? That could be a question. If there is, if they're from out of state, if it's an out of state university, finding out, you know, what do students do on the weekends and what kind of experiences would they have in the dorm? And so those are some of the kinds of questions they can ask, but really asking questions from a selfish standpoint, actually, you know, because, you know, if I'm coming from out of state, I don't want to really be at a school where there's nothing to do on the weekends because everybody goes home because they're local, you know?
Right.
I mean, right. So think about, you know, yourself, you know, and if, you know, you're thinking about a particular major, you know, how many other kids on the team are majoring in, you know, STEM? You know, so they can get a sense for, am I going to be, you know, really able to major in STEM at this school if I'm an athlete? Finding out realistically about the hours, what's a day in the life of a student athlete? What are the relationships with faculty members like? You know, how understanding are faculty members? And I wouldn't just rest on, you know, going to rate my professor, but actually talking with students. And to your point of, you know, the student tour guide and the coach being, you know, really good at selling you on that university, I always, always recommend that students talk to a random student, someone that is not a tour guide that you may see in the dining hall, and just ask them about what their experience was like and, you know, how did they make friends freshman year? And that'll tell you more than anything on the website or anything in the curriculum guide could ever tell you. A random student.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I recommend as well for these tennis players is you've got to talk to kids currently on the team and kids that recently have graduated from the team. Yeah. That's where you get the real scoop.
Yes, you really do. Yeah. You really do. Yeah.
So what are some other pointers that you have for student athletes in high school that want to play their sport in college on like the timing of reaching out to coaches and the timing? Obviously, the colleges open their applications in either August or September, typically, right? And the deadlines are typically in late December, and then you start finding out after the first of the year, depending on under what application you do, if you do early action, early decision, all that, that stuff. And those terms, by the way, are continually in flux because I've learned when my kids were applying to college, the terminology is very different today than it was even 10 years ago. So make sure you're up to speed on the current terminology.
Yeah. And I would say students should be up to speed on when they can reach out to coaches and, you know, when is a quiet period or a dead period where, you know, there is no contact. But for those students who are in, you know, sophomore year, I would say, you know, working on getting their video clips, that could be something useful for their time before they can, you know, start that kind of at least expect outreach from coaches. Right. And the important thing is really about knowing what you want. I think that is so critical, knowing your why and really getting a sense for why you want to be a collegiate athlete. And so sometimes, you know, that may take a little bit of time to do, but I don't want to shortchange it in any way, because I think it is important for students to do.
And it changes. I mean, let's be real. You know, what a 12, 13, 14-year-old says and what a 16, 17, 18-year-old says can be very different.
Yeah, it is. And I've had some students that, you know, ninth grade, 10th grade, they definitely want to play a sport. And, you know, by the time senior year comes, they're thinking, you know, I'm going to join the club team. And it's like, that's completely fine. Yeah. That's completely fine. So many times, you know, it's their parents' dream, but not necessarily their dream. And I really do. That's why I really want students to think about it for themselves in terms of what they want and not worry so much as pleasing their parent, because that, you know, can lead them to making decisions around a college choice where they're just not thriving because it wasn't their choice to begin with.
So let's say you have a situation like you're describing where it is the parent's dream and the kid's dream has morphed into something different. If you're the parent, what can you do? What can you look for? What can you ask of your child to make sure that you're not pushing your agenda on them? I mean, it's really tough.
I think it's really listening and being sensitive to when they're resisting. So I just feel like, you know, if you're really committed to something, you find a way to do it, you'll still do it. But if it's hard to wake them up, it's hard to, you know, get them to do something, they're not really interested in it, they are just going through the motions, you know, look for those telltale signs and opening up the communication about it. That's what I would advise. And sometimes, you know, our kids won't always come to us and say that.
Mm-hmm.
And
because for fear of disappointing us, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, because I'm a third party, you know, they may say it to me that they don't, you know, like something or that they don't want to do it. And I bring it up when we're with their parents, just from the standpoint of, you know, just kind of making sure that everyone is on the same page. Mm-hmm. And so it has to come up, I think, at least by junior year.
Yeah. So when you're working with families, you meet with the student individually. Mm-hmm. You meet with the parents individually.
Yes, I do meet with parents individually on occasion, but it's usually going to be a combination of individual student meetings and family meetings.
Okay.
And, you know, parents can always reach out and set up a time with me if they have something they want to talk about. But generally, it's going to be student individual meetings and family meetings.
Mm-hmm. And so when the child starts the application process, because we talked about the fact that you want them to start thinking about their why and what they're looking for out of this college experience, and then you start building this list of schools, mm-hmm. now it's time to apply. Is there a magic number of schools that kids should apply to kind of make sure they have some place that they want to attend?
Yeah, I would say what we're working towards in terms of a list is having around a dozen. And I usually say like 12 to 15 colleges that are a good fit for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they may end up applying to five of those, just depending on the timing of when they apply and when they hear back.
Okay.
And so that list is, of course, prioritized. And if they have, you know, nine colleges, I want three of them to be selective, three of them that are mid-range selectivity, and three of them may have better than a 50% chance. And so that's kind of how you know, we look at the list, because I don't want it to be, you know, 9 colleges that all have less than a 5% chance of admission.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes what students want to do, because they feel like the more of them I apply to, the higher my chances will be. But I'm thinking those numbers don't work right. I don't think it works that way. I haven't seen it work that way.
No.
You know, because some of my international students, they are, that's their approach to it. And they'll usually have 25 colleges and 20 of them are highly selective. And, you know, I get that, but I haven't seen it where they, you know, get into more because of that. Sometimes they don't get into any of those 20.
Right. Right. So. I mean, it's so tough now. And, you know, I every year I hear about, you know, the kid with the perfect GPA and, you know, this community service, and they play that instrument and they participate in this other sport and they've started a company and, you know, they've done all these things and they don't get into any of their top choice schools because it is so highly selective now. Being an athlete definitely helps, but again, it's no guarantee.
Right. It isn't. And I really do not believe in this whole notion of being quote unquote well-rounded, where you're doing a little bit of everything. I think it burns the student out and it burns the parents out as well.
Yes.
And I'm not a fan of that at all. What I share with students is to think about what it is they like doing and focus on that, you know? And when we look at when they, you know, like some of my athletes, when they're putting together their resume and they're calculating how many hours they spend in their sport, I'm thinking, if you're spending, you know, 600 hours a year, when do you have time to do all of these other things? You don't. And don't worry about it. Because if you want to do something else, if you want to have a job, you know, that's fine. Do that. But don't try to worry about doing community service, also doing X, doing Y. No, it just too much. And you need to think about what you want, what's going to support your success to be able to be a scholar and to be an athlete without trying to do it all.
Love that. Love that. We're coming to the end of our hour. My voice is like telling me we're coming to the end of our hour. So I want to just give you a chance to share with our audience how they can reach you, how they can find out more about Compass. And I don't like to ask about cost, but maybe a range so that parents can kind of get a gist of what they're looking at.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to say, too, to put out a number.
That's okay. You don't have to. We'll take that off the table.
But one of the things I will say is that, you know, the way to think about it is an investment. And I'm not going to shy away from that term in any way. And the difference between an investment and a cost is that there's a return on it. And there's value in what we bring in terms of our knowledge about the colleges, having a, you know, a process, a framework that's proven over the years. 95% of our students have been admitted to their top choice colleges, and the average scholarship is $75,000. And so that's what they're investing in, is that proven framework. And we have individual and group programs. And that those are opportunities where, you know, students can get that support. And I would say too, Lisa, you know, probably the biggest difference too, in terms of families doing it on their own and working with us, is that, you know, when parents are doing this on their own, they're spending over 300 hours of their time doing this. And so either way, they're going to be paying for it. And they have the experience of 1, 2, you know, maybe if they work with both of their kids, where we've worked with thousands of students and, you know, have seen you know, I personally have visited over 500 colleges.
And wow.
So it's a difference, you know, from that regard. And we're partnering with them for the success of their teen. And they're close to their children for sure. But kids just are going to hear things differently from a third party than they will from their parent. So, you know, that's what I'd say, you know, about, you know, the why in terms of investing in our services. And families can reach us at compasscollegeadvisory.com. And that's all the information is there, and they can see our proven framework and learn more about our services there. And we'd love to love the opportunity to speak with them about how we can support their success.
I love that. And you said you do group work as well. And I know that, you know, you offer your services to schools. Have you ever worked with like a tennis academy or, you know, a coach that has multiple students to come in and help them?
We have with other sports, but not with tennis. And that's a great idea. I'd love that. I'd love that. I used to play tennis in college, in high school, not college. They wouldn't have taken me in college, but in high school I did play. And so yeah, that would be awesome. But no, I haven't yet. So I'm looking forward to the opportunity for that.
So I'm going to just put it out to the tennis coaches that might be tuning into this. If you have a group of students that are in the college application years and would like to offer a service as a benefit to the families that work with you, please consider reaching out to Dr. Pamela Ellis in Compass College Advisory to bring her in or bring one of her other staff members in to help guide these kids through the process. Because as you said, the coaches know stuff. They know they have connections. They, you know, they may know college coaches. Maybe, like you said, maybe they played in college with a coach or whatever. But they don't necessarily know the intricacies of the application process. And I think it would be really beneficial to have an expert like you come in and even just do a presentation to the families would be an amazing opportunity. Okay.
Yeah,
so coaches, y'all hear that? Check out the show notes on parentingaces.com. Click the link, reach out to Pamela and get this going for your kids. It will be a great benefit. Well, Dr. Pamela Ellis, it has been an absolute pleasure meeting you and speaking with you and learning from you today and sharing all of what you do with our community. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Appreciate you.
And to the Parenting Aces community, thank you so much for tuning in. And we will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast. For tennis parents, by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.